welcome to the podcast. My name is James, and this is the podcast about polarizing movies. It's called Polarize Pod. It's about the movies that audiences and critics disagree on, according to Rotten Tomatoes. Sometimes the critics love it, sometimes the audiences hate it. Or vice versa. It is the former this time around. The critics love this movie, and if you clicked on it, I'm sure you know what it is. It would come up near the end if you're going alphabetical. It is Zathura. I wonder how many Z name titles there are out there. Can I even think of a Zodiac? One of my favorites, Zodiac. There's got to be more, and I'll continue to think throughout. I'm thinking like Steve Zissou, but that's not. There's a whole other bunch of words before you get to the Z at the very end of that title. But this one is Zathura. And it is a certified fresh 77% by the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Certified fresh. I didn't even know about that before we floated the idea of doing this movie. And it is, that's a popcorn bucket turned over with the popcorn kind of laying on the side there symbol for the audiences, which means it's a not so good score. That being a 51%, not good from the audiences. This seems like it would be the blockbuster, the people pleaser for the kids, the families going out to see the movies, but apparently not. But apparently the critics were, ooh, this is good filmmaking. This is excellent cinema. Certified fresh. Give us our best tomatoes. But not for the audience. And that's what we wheel and deal here in Polarized Pod, folks, is all those tomatoes and turned popcorn buckets. It's, great to be back. We are so back. And it's not just going to be me monologuing, just as a reminder. I know I got to remind everyone at this point in time of the episode, you don't have to be stuck with me for much longer, or just me, because I got another guy who's... I just pulled a card. Wait, what is this card I pulled from this mysterious game board? It says, rescue a stranded Brandini? What's that? Rap, rap, rap at the door.
Knock, knock, knock. Hello, everybody. Hey. It's me. James, the Z movie you forgot was Zindler's List.
How did
you
forget that? Of course. Yeah, Zindler's List. Yeah, Jurassic Park. Another Spielberg classic. Zord Z. Yeah.
Zapocalypse Now.
The Zodfather.
Yeah. Just among other Z classics. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Deliverance. Yeah. I mean, there's
Deliverance, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could go down the line. Zar Wars. Zardoz. Yeah. That actually is one.
Which I just watched recently.
It's on Prime. I was thinking about throwing it on. I feel like I need to be in a certain state of mind. I don't know if I've ever gotten through all of it. Did you do it?
So
that is a C at the beginning and the end of that word.
So the viewing I would recommend for anybody to watch Zardoz is what I did last time I watched it, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. Is I was hungover as shit, mm-hmm. and then ordered a Jersey Mike's giant sub, ooh. And then casually ate it over the course of watching the movie and napping.
Yeah,
really, really good if mm-hmm. you approach it that way.
Stretch.
I would recommend just. Miss like a 30 minutes, hour, and you're just like, oh, sandwich, oh, movie, oh, boring,
oh, back. Phone, oh, sleep,
back to sleep again.
That's the move for sure.
Yeah, that's the move, I would say. Man, what a wild movie that is, because that is, oh, God, I knew the director, but like this was his blank. Zardoz was his blank check, essentially.
Really?
And it had. If you could pull up the gentleman's name. But it's
John Borman, like, writer, director, John Borman.
Deliverance.
He loves Z letter names for his movies. So tell you what.
Deliverance.
That's
yeah.
funny that title came up already.
Right. But I think that was his movie before it, which was critically acclaimed.
Wow. Okay.
And then so his blank check was Zardoz, and it's just so wild. The aesthetic of it in particular is really kind of the most enjoyable part, I would argue, is there's so much like aesthetically interesting things about it. But then when people talk about what's going on, you're like, snooze, don't care. But when you're looking at it, you're like, wow, man,
yeah,
this is wild. This is crazy. Because I forgot, like, by and large what Zardoz was about, but it's so much about a super race.
Yeah. Can you explain
the like? Yeah. So it's this suit. So humanity got to a place through war and capitalism where it destroyed itself. And then this super race went into this other kind of realm almost. But realistically, it's like a place on Earth that they're trying to, that they've created this utopia. Like, but there's also
post-apocalyptic.
It's post-apocalyptic, yeah.
Like post-post.
Right.
Kind of like Horizon Zero Dawn, sort of, because it's like all...
Totally, because then there's
Earth is like now, taking everything back.
Right. You're right, because the distinction between like post-post-apocalyptic would be post-apocalyptic, the world is still destroyed. Post-post-apocalyptic is one group. Like, you're seeing one group that has risen to a similar level, right, that we were before, but now it's like more concentrated or has some weird like perspective on it, right?
Just like a new identity for the Earth that's like settled into the new reality moving forward of whatever that may be.
Totally.
And, you know, like the I like in the, like just even the imagery, because my memory of Zardoz is it being like green and lush and stuff like that, not like a post-apocalyptic usually is like buildings torn down, fires, like the atmosphere is fucked or something. And then yeah, I think of like put like a Horizon Zero Dawn where it's like, oh, you see ruins of buildings covered in trees and greenery and everything, and everything's lush again because the Earth is kind of like taking the itself back in a way without like humanity, like less humanity out there.
And Death Stranding 2 is that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because that's absolutely like a rebuilding process of like the new normal. Oh, wow. That's a whole. Can we just do a whole episode about that?
Please. I mean, we haven't gotten into Sathura yet. I mean, if you want to share your opinions on Death Stranding 2, I would love to get it on wax, how we feel about it. A video game, I would argue, is one of the most important video games ever made.
Absolutely.
I'm at that level, James.
Hands down.
Of like zealot for this game. Of
same.
Because like... Okay, so the series, you would look at it as a whole, which is really funny because, like, so I played, I would say, like 15, 20 hours of the game before I looked at any reviews of it. And
I can't say I have yet.
Because I didn't, like, both of us have played the first one. So I'm very much of the ilk of, like, and I'm sure anybody who's played the first one going into the second one is like, I don't want to know anything about this, right?
Yeah.
Like, you benefit so much from not knowing anything about it because you're in such great hands with the storytelling by Hideo Kojima. Like, it's going to just be this very wild ride that you're going to just really get to experience. So
I was important for both of us. Like, both of us, we got PS5s just to be, I feel like, to experience it as it's happening. I really didn't want to know anything, and to be able to be there,
of course,
right at the beginning was special. Yeah,
I mean, a testament to the game is like realistically both of us spent over $400 just to play a singular video game.
Really?
Yes, it's going to help us with GTA 5. We both talked about how that's not going to come out on PC, so we should get these consoles. But realistically, like, we both bought this video game for a exorbitant amount, all things compared, especially because video games in the news are getting talked about so much about being $80 is such a crazy thing. Just so to frame this in context, it's like, yeah, this game we spent a lot of money on. Anyways, I don't want to talk about money. I want to talk about the game. The Death Stranding 2, so cinematic, and any movie fans that have are listening or whatever, if you haven't played these video games, you should, right?
Absolutely. And any fan of, I love the combination of like real hard sci-fi with elements of surreal, like surreal elements, as well as act like dumb action stuff and like silly kind of campy B movie sort of inspiration in a way. But then everything is so fully realized. And God, there was something that happened last night when I was playing it, just last night, that blew my fucking mind, like in a way that a game hasn't before. And I had to walk, like I had to just walk away, and I was just vocally just being like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
You really fucking did it. Like, I can't believe, like, I don't, have you entered a code for anything? I don't want to be
spoiled. No.
Okay.
Oh, I've only entered a code to get into Hartman's place. That's
that code. So where that code comes, I really don't want to, that's all I want to say is just that. I don't want to say what it is, but where you get that, well, just for anyone who out there, there's probably nobody, but if there is anyone out there that doesn't want to know, and I want them to experience that moment, but where you get that code is, was a mind blowing thing for me to like just intuitively figure it out for a question they ask you at the beginning of the game. And then you just kind of brush it away. And then there's this code that comes out and you're like, oh, I think I, and then, oh, sure enough, it is.
Oh, it's that code. Oh,
fucking love it. Fucking love it. And, yeah, I, it's a hard thing to probably just casually get into. You kind of either go fully in or you're not really feeling it. And it is something that I'm sure other people would agree as well, or have the experience where maybe they didn't like it very much at, at first. Cause I got a PlayStation 4 kind of to play a lot of PlayStation exclusive games around the time of like 2020 COVID stuff. And I was playing through like Uncharted and, you know, some other like Last of Us, some God of War and Spider-Man, all these fun like PlayStation exclusives I didn't have access to and was finding a way to pass the time. But when I threw on Death Stranding, it was just kind of too real for those times a little bit. And it didn't hit me. And I was like, this is like too real, just like desolate area. And you're just delivering things to people. And I took another chance at it and revisited it. And, I try to remind myself of those experiences when you revisit a piece of art, any, whether it be video game or music or movie or whatever it is, and having a different view and appreciating it in a new way and actually coming around to liking it, which is like this is a completely different situation. But I watched Charlie's Angels Full Throttle again recently. And I was like, I remember hating this movie when it first came out as a kid, cause I loved the first one. And, I watched it, like, I feel like in theaters, this is a completely different side tangent, and I hated it because it's so cheesy and stupid. And now I've come full, like, and then I watched it again later in my life. I'm like, I'm gonna watch this ironically and laugh at it, and that was fun in its own way too. But now I just like fucking love it. Now I just straight up love it. And there's definitely aspects of like laughing at it and not, you know,
sure,
buying into the whole thing because it's asinine, it's bananas, it's complete just like Superman, like a superhero logic in a way that's like fastened through by the way of Fast and Furious, you know, where you're watching Fast 6 and they're flying around cars and bashing into things and they're just like, get right up and they're fine, you know. And then they have I feel like kind of leaning into the old campy stuff of the show that I didn't watch by any means, but just to say that coming back around on art is a fun experience. And that's another wholehearted recommendation for me if you're looking for, you just threw on Zardoz, you're done with like half of your Sammy, or like, oh, what do I watch next? Maybe you go Full Throttle. I don't know.
Take it to the next level and full throttle it.
Mm-hmm. there should be more Full Throttle movies.
So to start talking about Zathura, was this a movie that you watched when it came out? Like, talking about revisiting, I guess, is the conversation that you presented that I want to like tie into the movie. Is, did you watch this when it came out? Because I don't think I did. Which is it because we were like 15 and this was like a kiddie baby movie?
I think there was a little that it did look kiddie baby boo boo butt sort of movie, but doo doo diaper baby butt movie. But also the thing that I looked up, just doing like very casual research of this movie, it came out exactly when Goblet of Fire came out.
Oh yeah.
Which was a big deal in those like midnight movies that we would go to where we were from and everything. Sure. Like, I'm sure a lot of people did that at the time, but that was such a tradition. I feel like where we're from, like you just go into midnight movies, especially Harry Potter movies, was a big deal.
Absolutely. And also too, Revenge of the Sith came out.
Really?
And then a couple of same year? And a couple other big movies, which got me thinking about the CGI of this movie, which I would say upon this watch, I didn't mind.
Same.
There were some parts that were rough, but like this movie came out in 2020, like 2005, right? Not 2020, but 2005. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. There, it's so interesting to start really getting into this movie about the Jon Favreau of this all, the CGI, the working in this style of movie, because to me, Jon Favreau start is with like, Maid and Swingers, which is like kind of has this like Tarantino vibe to it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd forgotten that he didn't direct Swingers as well. Yeah, it was
no
Maid was wrote his it. First big one, and the, yeah, wrote it, and then mm-hmm. Elf, and then this one. So Elf. This was like
yes, Elf.
That's yeah, that was Elf was talking about. Kind of the big yeah, like opening. Big like
it's has, it really
you know get, Maid was still very kind of like I never saw it, but it looks very like Swingers-ish and indie and kind of low budget,
very much so. Yeah, like it's an adult movie, low budget. But Elf, okay, so Elf is interesting in relation to
that's why he gets this movie for sure. Yeah,
that's what for sure why he gets this movie, and it made me think about the like the special effects in Elf, mm-hmm. which is minimal, but. To Elf's credit, most people will rewatch that every year for Christmas. And like, I don't think anybody has ever mentioned about like how the sleigh or like the CGI of it all was bad, you know? And so it's funny to think about the like ability to get a movie like this after that movie where you're like, oh, here's somebody who could handle maybe doing something like that based on working with special effects artists and making a film in a way that the special effects of it look good.
And, absolutely. Yeah. And I watched right before this a little, it was on the DVD. I think someone uploaded on YouTube of a little featurette of behind the scenes. And it seemed like everybody's interview, it must've just been the special effects portion of the behind the scenes, everyone was just talking about how they wanted to do it as practically as possible. And John Favreau saying that as well. And they had Stan Winston on, you know, working on this as well, working on the robot and the Zorgons.
Zorgons. Yeah. The Zorgons. Hey, yeah.
Bad right. case of Zorgons. Hey, man. But I really appreciate that side of him. And a lot of the people around are like, oh yeah, he respects the old like an older style of filmmaking. He loves Star Wars and these kind of movies that are creative with the practical side of things that make it feel like it's directly in front of you. Having it be in one location the entire time definitely helped that. And seeing the set was very interesting where they put, what is it? It's not called a girder. I think it was called a girder. It's just a whole foundational thing underneath the house that was able to tip it and move it in a way and shake it as well.
Whoa.
Essentially like an earthquake,
like it's floating. Yeah.
Yeah. And like when they're sliding down the floor and everything all the way to the wall, like that, they're just tipping the whole structure over and everything like that. Even cool. Meteors are shooting stuff out of the ground and there's a lot of explosions and stuff. And the Zorgons themselves, like, there's something about it when I first saw it. I'm like, I know there's a CG element to it, but there's a real like touch and feel and texture to
sure.
it, that it looked like a dumb guy in a mask sort of thing, which I love. I love all that.
I loved it. And it. Yeah. And it looked good upon a rewatch, the Zorgons in particular.
Yeah.
Like clearly men in suits and skulking around and doing that whole thing. I don't know. That stuff really held up well. And which, again, I bring it up is, and you recognize it seems like, is here's the guy that goes on to be the guy for all of the special effects movies.
Because he does Iron Man essentially after this, right?
Correct.
Is one of
the- And everything else in Marvel, you know, he does all the live action stuff for Disney, Mandalorian, that kind of stuff. Like,
well, that's why I want to. Yeah. Like speaking of the practical effects of it and everything, I think Mandalorian was a great testament as well. And I know he's working on that movie, which even looking at his career, I feel like he hasn't really done a movie in a while. You know, he's had his hands in things, of course. And the Mandalorian was kind of his last big thing and doing. That show, I really liked all of his projections that he would put up on like screens rather than doing a green screen. This really big screen and just project a scene onto it, and people would just act right in front of it. And even that had a different feel that would just automatically be different than anyone else out there, which is a cool idea just to try to set yourself apart, and people can feel it too. Yeah. Whether they clock it or not, they can, I feel like they feel it at least. And yeah, even one of the people that was interviewed is his good buddy, the kid, Peter Billingsley, the kid from Christmas Story, is like him and Vince Vaughn and him are like good buddies. So it's just funny seeing him like getting interviewed as a producer on this movie and everything. It's like, oh, it's that Christmas Story kid. He's not definitely not a kid anymore.
No, he's a grown man.
Yeah, I just saw Rudy for the first time recently too. That was fun seeing, just side note. Yeah, it was fun seeing Jon Favreau, young Jon Favreau. He's baby Favreau in that movie. And then there's like a little bit of Vince Vaughn as well. It's cool seeing them trying to get their start. That was a pretty good movie, Rudy.
Rudy.
Getting through some sports movies. but yeah, I mean, I think just talking about this, Stan Winston and the special effects and everything, and the director Jon Favreau is kind of his big start, I feel like, was Elf. And this is in a way like him doing a little bit of a sophomore thing to his success. He really is pretty successful in his ventures, I feel like, and then you get the writer David Koepp, who's a big deal. Like, I mean, it's especially even like this year to last year, like he, within the past 2 years and amongst his illustrious career, he wrote Presence, a Steven Soderbergh movie. He wrote Black Bag, another Soderbergh, and he wrote the new Jurassic World movie.
Crazy, it's, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And he's so crazy. And you go through his career. I mean, that's just the icing on the cake of all of his other amazing stuff that he's done in, and some, you know, stinker butt Johnson.
Yeah. And the stinker butt Johnson stuff, I would argue, is this movie too, because I think the writing in this movie is not good. Like, just the way, and to start getting into the movie proper, like, the setup of this movie is void of a lot of potential payoffs. It is so crazy how much of this movie in the beginning to set up, like, why the kids are playing the board game, like, and who the kids are, and like, or yeah, like who the kids are, and their perspective and whatnot. Like, it's really wild to me how lazy things are. Especially as like a movie like this should have a lot of energy in the beginning of it to set up a bunch of things, and it's really crazy how the middle portion of this to the end, like almost all the way up to the last 20 minutes, there isn't a lot of like in that interesting payoffs, or not a lot of setup for payoffs to happen. And it really blew me away how lazy the, like,
especially the screen, when you have the big twist at the end, you know, you could have a little bit more runway
for more juice. Yeah, absolutely. Oh my god, like that whole,
yeah, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that later,
but I mean, just speaking of that, like, you know, I'm thinking of something, yeah, like a it's such a moral story, you know, and it's really so much just the brotherhood of it all, and them and their relationship, right. Which, yeah, I mean, how did that work for you, the brotherhood, having a brother yourself? Did anything of the brothers kind of ring some bells?
The thing that got to me was more of the end stuff, because the setup that I have such an issue with is they're so mean and one note to each other that it's just so frustrating how unlikable both of the brothers are. Like, I get that the struggle is that it's it's us doing so much of the heavy lifting, really, because I don't think the movie does well to communicate this, the growth or the character progression of the Josh Hutcherson character loving his brother.
Yeah,
I think is like the core of what I would say is the core, simply speaking, is the core of the movie. All this movie is them just pissing off their dad and their sister through them pissing off each other. But I don't know. There's something to it, man, that really drove me nuts of how, like, the brother, like, how unlikable the two boys are, I guess, is how I would put it. It really drove me nuts. Like, that there's not more of a frustration with their parents getting divorced, or situations where the brother, like, I think the problem I feel like is that the movie is so contained within the, like, a strict timeline of, like, you're not seeing other situations that the brothers were in outside of the main, like, what we're actually seeing in the movie. And that's a problem because, like, yeah, an older brother is frustrated with his younger brother, but, and then they're so mean to each other. The movie to me does not do well to, like, try to establish a more interesting relationship between two brothers, I guess is what I would say.
That's well put, because I think it's not like all of those scenes don't work, but they, just how you put it, is very one note. It's almost like having the same scene over and over and over.
Over.
You know, it escalates definitely a bit, you know, and when he, what does he say?
He gets really
mad, and then, you know, Tim Robbins has to go to work. And I thought their performances were good, especially baby Hutcherson, because in that moment when he is, like, sad and despondent and just look straight up depressed when he's sitting in the chair and not wanting to play catch, I thought that was just a good piece of acting, and their chemistry was good. And I could sense in a way that, and we've talked about this when we have talked about movies like Hook or other, you know, kid movies where you have a group of kids, even just a couple, that chemistry and that excitement and everything, I think, permeates from a really good set. And I feel like Jon Favreau put together a fun set for them. And that was a lot of the things they were talking about, was those effects being right there in front of the kids added to their performance so much, because they were able to react exactly to what they were seeing, rather than just like, oh, it's a tennis ball, be scared, you know? But to go back to, yeah, I mean, their relationship, I think that there was so much more opportunity there to get deeper, because as someone who really appreciates limitations and art in general, but in the movie sense, like, oh, well, how can I make a space board game movie all within one house? And that's like that's kind of the conceit of a director like Favreau, like trying to find a way to have fun within the limitations. And he was able to shoot, chronologically and tear the house apart piece by piece and everything. But in another way, like, as much as those limitations can inspire and make a work laser focused and make it purposeful, it doesn't get deep in this movie. As well as I get sick of the house, and I don't like, you know, it's just, I get bored of it and everything. Yeah. Or it's even, you know, a movie, what was called No One Will Save You, the one where, you know, it's just no dialogue for the entire movie. Why? Because that was a challenge. That was a pointless challenge that the director set up himself, you know, sideburn for that movie. But it's just there's good and bad limitations especially when you take it so far and everything. And that's just me getting into a part that held me back from fully enjoying this movie as well, was being in the house the whole time. I'm jumping into a different point and everything, but just being in that house that whole time, man, I there's movies like that I do like, for sure. There's plenty of, like, horror movies or what's the bodies or something like that. There's plenty, but I just wanted to be out in sci-fi, like a sci-fi world, and to be out in space and everything, and everything and all that stuff was just, it felt limited in a way that was frustrating. And I think that'll be one of my overall thesis
totally
for the movie, but we can definitely work through some broad kind of aspects of it. I think their relationship is the overriding part of it, because the other characters don't have much else to do. One of which is a Tyler Durden situation, but, you know,
yeah, totally.
But yeah, I was bummed about Kristen Stewart not, you know, kind of being in it a bit more until, you know, the very end. I think it's a fun little thing to have your sister frozen in the bathroom. It's
totally
a fun like kid thing, whatever. But she's, you know, she's great. It would have been nice to see her a little bit more, but whatever.
Again, no. Whatever, like, no, you're totally right. Like, you don't need to poo-poo it. It's like I wanted to see more Kristen Stewart as well, because, like, in a better movie, in my opinion, like, yes, having her removed for a period of time in the movie because of the boys getting into trouble, I liked that dynamic of, like, big sister's now, like, you know, locked away because the boys fucked up or whatever. I like that. But again, like, the writing and the pacing of this movie is really, really wrong and off and weird, and I don't care for it. So to get into the movie proper and start to go through the beats of it is, we open up and there are these two brothers, I would say probably between the ages of like 12 and 7, something That's around those
lines. I think so.
Yeah. And they are with their dad, Tim Robbins, because Tim Robbins and his wife are separated. And then the dad gets them for a period of time, and then the mom gets them for a period of time. We
Seems
meet them
pretty fresh, too.
Pretty fresh. We meet them where the dad is just bought a new house that he's expressed through the dialogue that he's excited to rebuild so that they can have a fun place to be at when they're with him.
He's got to hang up that bullet poster, man. It's kind of fun. That was the most divorced dad thing I've ever seen. Like, oh, I got my bullet poster. It looked dope. Sure. I'm like, oh, man. That looks cool.
Tim Robbins is really wonderful in this movie, which, okay.
Love him.
To speed through what I'm trying to get to we can just have, like, the conversation I want to have with you about this movie and critiquing it is, like, so in relation, which I want to start positing things because we're going to do Jumanji, is, so in Jumanji, the movie starts with a clear issue where the boy, the protagonist's dad, is... wants him to be something he's not. So he runs away from the pressures of being an adult to just running away in the movie, and then finds the game, plays it, and then gets sucked into it, you know.
Fucking
and
horrifying
then,
scene, dude.
That horrifying.
Shit fucked me up.
And then smartly, I would say, and maybe again, this will be the last time I'm prefacing before we see it, is I think smartly in my remembrance of it is the movie then goes from Robin Williams' character as the boy in the start to then the same thing is essentially happening with the present day boy. And so then Robin Williams throughout a majority of Jumanji is growing up with the boy and then giving him advice or trying to help him through not making the same poor decisions to show the young boy that, like, you are your own person. Don't, you know, you don't need to hold this guy up to such high esteem. I get that he's your dad, but he has his own things going on and so forth. This movie, on the other hand, shows Tim Robbins as a wonderful dad. Like, there's literally nothing wrong with Tim Robbins. He's has a job. He has his boys and his daughter around at this huge house that he can afford. He clearly tells them, like, I'm hanging out playing catch with you right now. Like, even to the point of he has the time to play catch with them. Like,
and they each get 20 throws or like 25 throws or whatever it is. Like, clear, like, I'm gonna take an hour break for work. Like, he's very clear about everything.
Really awesome dad. So I'm like, boys, he got this amount of turns, you're gonna get the same. And then also too, in the beginning of this movie,
sorry, I dropped my coaster.
It's okay,
my beverage, continue.
The conflict between the two brothers in this movie starts with them playing catch with their dad. Again, great dad. Argue needs to be a bad, like, that's kind of what I'm arguing here, right? Is there's no drama that's happening. Aside from two boys that arguably are totally justified to be selfish because they're like 12 and 7 or whatever. Like, they don't, you know, can't play the catch the same at the same level. You know what I mean? Like, that's the drama that is posited in the movie.
They're going through a divorce. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot. But it's a lot of subtext, and it's a lot of stuff that you have to, like you're saying, like kind of work a little bit harder in your mind than you should to have to read into it a bit. Not that you know that it's that deep or anything, but there should be more pointed setups for a payoff in the way at the end. Correct. It's more than just, you know, their relationship. Because what is he? Oh, that's what he says. It's your fault that they got divorced, and that, you know, that's, well,
that's hard to hear. But that's also an 11-year-old, you know, lashing out because of the situation, which is interesting for sure. But the dad and the repercussions of it are so minimal. Like, you know what was interesting is I thought for a brief moment when the two boys have a blowout with their dad playing catch, the dad then goes up to the younger child, who's played by Jonah Bobo, which I think is a really funny name.
It's a fun name.
It's a fun name. Goes up to his room, and then the Jonah Bobo asks, am I better than my brother in... I can't remember which way. And the dad is
more
so
creative or something. Yeah.
Right. Am I more creative? Can you tell me that I'm better than my brother in some type of way? And then the dad is just wonderful about it. It's like, oh, you're your own person, man. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Like, I love you for who you are. Like, there's so much just great, like, confident, comfortable shit going on.
That's where it's like, this was written by a divorced guy. This was written by a divorced man that's like,
but in a divorced guy that is denying what is actually happening with his son is my problem.
But I'm agreeing with you absolutely. And it's painting the dad as like the most level-headed dude and just doing all the right things, you know.
Right. Which doesn't make for an interesting movie. And then because of that, there isn't any setup. So again, to go back to the Jumanji like comp is, again, there is so much setup in the first 20 minutes of Jumanji, in my remembrance, of growing, like the need to grow up being forced upon you and dealing with that. And in this movie, all it really is like, don't be so much of a stinker to your brother. And then they start playing the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy to me how low the stakes are getting us to playing Zathura. Like,
yeah. And even the
brothers even play it together. There's not even a fucking dynamic of like one brother is like, oh, play this game. Really? It's happened so quickly. Yes, there's a little bit of this that happens. I won't completely disregard that. The movie attempts to be like, oh, the younger brother's like, come on, play this video, you know, play this game with me. But then it happens so quickly. And then there isn't also something that they're overcoming where it's not really like you feel like the brothers actually hate each other. They're just brothers going through, you know, I don't know, brother bullshit.
Yeah, but I mean, I definitely feel you on your point where it could have been more specific and well-written and more cathartic when you get to the end, when all these things kind of come together, because you're not having you are dealing with outside forces because they are coming to you, but you're not going to them. So you're really like holed in, and there's so much opportunity for dialogue and working on those things together. Even, you know, as we move along here a little bit, you know, I don't want to just to touch on, but like when, as Dax Shepard comes in, everything too, like that could be more subtly bleeding in a message that isn't, you're not so blindsided by and then swiftly pulled away from at the end. So I definitely appreciate the sentiment on like setup, because it does seem random and happenstance how these things kind of happen, as like, you know, and I do try to put my mind into a child and see how much I would enjoy it, but it doesn't,
oh, sure.
But it does not, you know, and something I think we've expressed in the past, like does not mean that the movie needs to be less deep, you know, because a child's watching. If anything, more so. And touching more so on those things and not dumb it down just because, oh, it's for kids. And I don't think that's what's happening here. I just think in the way that it's catering to like just a roller coaster ride for like Rollick through space and just having an adventure and just kind of having surprising things show up with each card and all that kind of stuff, which like was sort of the fun of Jumanji of like, what's going to happen when we roll next? It's like, well, we have to keep going because that's the only way we're going to get to the end. And it's all going to be over. And that tension of having to roll was, yeah. Now, not that Jumanji was ever like my most favorite movie, but when you see a movie that's so similar, you realize what works and what doesn't in such a bigger way. And I just remember at that time, yeah, thinking like, fuck, like being so stressed out, you know, and I was a kid watching the movie, of course, but like so stressed out when they were going to have to roll and, you know, see what's going to happen next. Cause there was a lot of wild stuff, but with this one, it's an old school game that he just happens to find in the basement. I think I'd say the biggest setup and payoff in this movie is the dumb waiter. You know, that's
oh my God.
That's like the only thing. Cause that's used so much.
So much. He's so small and he can be in there. My God. Yeah. Right.
And finding like a different way to go in and out of the basement you know, yeah.
I'm glad you bring that up because at least that has a genuine payoff that, and also a point of tension in the movie where he's trying to get up with the board game after going down to the, get it from the Zargons. And like, there's this whole like tension of like, oh no, the Zargon's up there. And then the Zargon cuts it. And then
yeah,
like
it's scary. There are stuff in this movie.
I know I'm like seemingly shitting on it. There are genuine stuff that makes sense to me why Jon Favreau became the person that he did. Like, I really want to get that out of the way of like, there is so much about this movie visually that still works to this day. The problem for me wholeheartedly is the script because the people like, and here's the other thing is you kind of brought this up and I totally agree is it's not the actor's problem too. Cause I actually genuinely dug what everybody was doing in this movie. It's just what they were saying and when it was being said is my problem. You know what I mean?
Like, and it is hard to find. I'd imagine good kid actors and these kids are fantastic. I mean, obviously Hutcherson
great.
Goes on to have a career and Kristen Stewart's kind of already on her way. But Bobo, man, Bobo's great too. And it's something Bobo's that's great. Coming from like a younger sibling perspective that I did appreciate was cool. Almost every single line that he started with was, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. And almost every single line was just, I'm sorry. And just like trying to like people please and trying too. To like, you know, too. Just
feel and he's got like, these big eyes.
He's got the big eyes. And the other thing that I appreciated, which is coming from good directing, to give it to Favreau as well, is there are scenes where, whether they're talking to Tim Robbins or Dax or Kristen Stewart or whatever, where the shots on both of them and they are both just screaming over each other. All like, it seems like, kind of improvised, like we gotta take another turn and then the Zorgons are here but they're both just on top of each other and that had a real chaotic kid energy to it as well as when
such good kid energy
like 100%. When playing with Dax that time when they're getting really mad at each other and Dax is just trying to settle them down to play the game. I thought like that was well done. Like that I like it felt chaotic and loud and real and like they were really mad at each other. But that's where, you know, the overall structure of the script and making it an interesting turn of events as it goes along, instead of just randomized, you know, just kind of, you know, stuff happening, you know, that's where the, you know, the docking of points will come from.
Before we get into Dax Shepard, because I definitely want to talk about that, can we take a break?
Yes, absolutely. We'll take a little
breaky break.
Zathura break. We'll be right back. We are back. It's like the beginning of them finding the game, which again is kind of just happenstance, and it's just there. You don't get like a story of how it how it got there. And yeah, I don't need all this stuff, but it, I don't know, just a little.
I don't need that stuff. You're right.
Yeah, I don't need it to be too, but just like a little bit of lore or something, like a little, just, you know.
It's, or it's more so about the relationship.
It's an old house. That's again, all, it's an old house.
But I need more of the, like, again, to the Jumanji comp is this board game was first found here, and then it was like covered up until the present day. Like there needs to be some association given to the game as to like it, again, it serves Jumanji so well that this movie is lacking, where the importance of the game has, it doesn't exist in this movie. Like there isn't anything about like
set up to it. Yeah.
Like if I were to, again, I'm sorry that I keep doing this, but you know what? Maybe it's just going to be part of the show, is if I were to rewrite this, is like rewrite Dax Shepard's character differently, where he is more like, Robin Williams, where he's the, like, he's been stuck there the whole time, because it presents, the movie presents that. And
that would make more sense.
Zero whip it.
And the twist isn't worth it enough. They don't make the twist worth it enough to just not do the obvious thing of having Dax be the little boy that grew up in that house originally and had a brother.
Dude, that part sucks.
Like, what?
We don't, the Dax being the older brother.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that is a whole thing for sure. But it definitely is like not earned whatsoever. But just the easiest thing would be, yeah, just he grew up like whatever in the 80s or something, and they got this game, Zathura, with his brother, and you know, like that,
it'd be like 60s,
that's like a horror 60s. Story with him, and it just is the, and it just takes the obvious way where he wish, and I was like, oh, that's sweet, he's gonna, we're kind of getting into it, but he's like, he's wishing his brother, he's wishing his brother back, that's sweet, like,
yeah.
Like I kind of like that, like I, and
I do too,
and it just pulled the whole rug away from my brief enjoyment of that, of like, I would have just loved to just have it be his brother, and then Dax like either revert, like, yeah, they would have to be the same age, so either Dax would revert back to a kid, or the kid, his brother, would grow, would be older now, and it would be like Seth Green. And
I have an easier solution for this.
Okay.
Is that Dax Shepard,
go back to their timeline or something?
Dax Shepard, easy solution here. Dax Shepard, in a similar situation, doesn't have to be connected to the brothers that are part of the story at all. It just, Dax Shepard was looking for his brother, and then instead of having that moment where it shows the exact same kid again, which is really confusing and jarring, I would argue, to have the same kid scene. Just the reason, like, because ultimately, in my mind, the point of Dax Shepard is he has gone through what they're going through, and he is trying to help them get to a better solution, right? Because, like, with the gold card that they got about making a wish, Dax Shepard the whole time was like, I know what you're thinking. Don't do that. That's not going to help you.
Some pretty good tension in that moment. I thought that was a pretty good tension.
Pretty good tension. But the movie, sorry. The movie didn't set that up at all. So that moment is, from our perspective, is only based on what has happened with the two brothers. Dax Shepard's in like involvement or his advice, we don't know at all, and we're not going to know for the next 30 odd minutes, that the reason that he is encouraging Josh Hutcherson to not make the wish that Dax Shepard now knows, because now we've seen the movie, like none of that matters to us.
Well, he reveals it pretty shortly after, like, because he gets mad and he's yelling at him, and then he goes up to check that room and the brother isn't there. And then he's like, oh, well now you're going to be stuck here forever. And then the brother pops out from under the bed and they're all just like, why were you yelling at him? Like, what was the problem? And he sits him down and tells him, I had a brother and now I made a wish, you know? And like, that's revealed pretty closely after. And Well, yeah.
Sorry.
I'm just saying, like, to give it some credit, I like how that is revealed. I like that as an audience, I didn't need it to be plainly told to me that he had done this before Josh Hutcherson was making the wish on the star, because before he did that, there was so much tension between him and his brother that was set up pretty well of like, they're really mad at each other and it's really heated right now. And now he gets this wish and he's, you know, he goes over there and it's like, in my mind, I know what he, you know, is, you know, he does well as an actor to portray like upset. Dax Shepard even says like, just how you're looking right now, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't make a decision in anger. And that in the slow, like light moving over and everything, that was, it worked somewhat okay for me. And I like that he revealed it after of like, you know what they want you to think, which was like a nice piece of tension that they didn't have to too plainly set out. And then it was kind of funny. It's like, I just wanted a football signed by Brett Favre. He's like, you fucking idiot. You could have wished this whole thing away. And he's like, it made me nervous. Oh my God, it was kind of funny, but
can we talk about Dax Shepard?
Because anything before that was just the robot and the meteors, I think, which is fine.
The robot.
Sure.
That's
a Stan Winston thing, yeah.
Yeah, and also too, it's a very easy comp between this and Jumanji with the lion that exists in Jumanji. Yeah.
Looks very lost and spacey.
Look, because in Jumanji, they like a lion gets summoned because of the roll, and then they have to like lock it away in a room of the house. But then there's always just understood that there's this lion in this room in the house.
They stole Mike Tyson's lion, yeah. What? Hell Todd yeah. Phillips saw Jumanji.
That was so.
It was like, that'd be crazy.
That was God damn it.
Woo! All right. Sorry,
but no, don't apologize, you little devil.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Jota Bobo.
I'm such a Jota Bobo.
You're such a Jota Bobo.
You're such a Walt.
I like the robot. The robot was cool to me because, like, with the combination of practical effects of it with the CGI, I thought it worked really well. That there, like, again, similar to Jumanji, that there is in this house, there's this threat that is now a part of the equation. So there's always this level of tension of don't go into the basement because there's that robot in there.
It's a real Evil Dead situation. It's
such an Evil Dead situation. But okay, Dax Shepard. I really want to talk about
the board game. Is the Necronomicon? Yep. It's Evil Dead.
In preparation for this podcast, I listened to Armchair Expert. Have you ever listened to this?
No, but it sounds familiar.
It's Dax Shepard's his podcast.
Right. Okay.
That's very great. Successful.
Yeah. I see it recommended to me. That's right. I'm not remembering.
The episode that I watched in preparation for this was him and Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Talking
about F1 and shit.
And it colored my opinion of the movie where I enjoyed Dax Shepard in this. Like, if I were to talk about like what's wrong with the movie, Dax Shepard honestly isn't the issue.
I was surprised as well. Yeah,
I'm not the biggest fan. I was surprised as well. Of like, you would think he would be too much.
Yeah,
or not understand the assignment. I guess
it's like that top kind of, and chewing every slice of scenery that's available to him.
Right.
Yes.
Correct.
Is my assumption, and which he did not really do.
He did not do it all. Actually, he was really grounded in almost every scene of the movie. And it was really blowing my mind. Same. Where it was like, wow, like, this is obviously a play for, you know, this is leading into, you know, he was very popular on Punked. You know, he was kind of that guy that's like part of that type of generation that's like
skater, kind of like
skater, or I was gonna say like Jackass adjacent. You know what I mean?
Sure. Degenerates.
degenerates. So that influenced me going into this being like, oh, Dax Shepard's going to be extra. Yeah. He's going to, you know, it's he's going to make it about him because that's the only way he knows how to act or whatever.
Goofy dumb. And
it was goofy dumb. Yeah. Not never taking anything too seriously. But he was good in this.
Subtle.
And so watching and listening, I did both of it.
At the same time?
It's weird. No. I did this weird thing where I would be like, in my car, I'm going to listen to this part of the podcast. Wow, okay. And then when I'm at home, I'm going to have the video of it.
That was a facetious question, and I did not expect an actual answer.
No, yeah, I was like, I was juggling both because I wanted to listen to the whole episode of it. Because, like, I had listened to Armchair Expert, like, last time I listened to it was, like, honestly, 2 years ago or something like that. And then revisiting it, I'm like, wow, Brad Pitt was just on there the other week and whatnot. And then I watch it, and I'm like, man, this is such a great interview because he's just such a, like... And he even makes light of this in the podcast of like, he's such a people pleaser. So he just like becomes the person that he thinks people want to be. And it like shows in the movie where because I didn't think about him like this is he's actually like, see, you can kind of tell like listening to like the direction and what like emotion and level he should be at in comparison to what the scene or what the scene's calling for. And it was really blowing my mind where, yeah, like if you were to like on its face, Zathura, you'd be like, oh, it's a Jumanji remake. Jumanji had, you know, stars in it by and large. So this is a vehicle to make more stars. And with Jon Favreau in particular, too, like you're like, oh, this is, you know, he and I posted in our Discord about how like the casting director, Ava Kaufman, like there is such an intentionality with the casting of this. And it's so interesting how like all of the people cast in this are really great.
Yeah.
Like we like again, I guess I'm just reiterating the same point of like. There are so many actually great things about this movie, but it's just so wild to watch it where you're so frustrated why this movie isn't better than ostensibly the potential that you see it could be. And in that, you're like, so why isn't this good? And then that I keep coming back to him like, Dax Shepard, like... is playing this character well, but there's not enough for him to do. And I just feel so like often that there's just like, oh, you have Kristen Stewart who could act the shit out of the stuff that she is, but then she's like removed for a majority of the movie. And then when she comes in, it's just like to say one line and then do something. And it's like, it's so bizarre to watch a movie that has a lot of potential and it seemingly is squandered. It's really weird.
Yeah, it feels a little hollow at the end of it all. It doesn't really like I think it's gonna be extremely forgettable for me, everything that happens.
Totally.
Even a final, not really, just another note on the chemistry and the acting. There was something that caught me as well between Josh Hutcherson and Kristen Stewart. They like acted the same way. It was so interesting to me, like when Josh Hutcherson was really upset and when Kristen Stewart is kind of always a little upset, which is that kind of what I like. Upset, I kind of like about her too. Yeah, she's like a little, you know, like rolling around.
Watch Virgin Suicide again. What was that line? That line really was funny to me. It's like she, 13. Like Tim Robbins.
That was the movie 13. Yeah.
Oh my God. Tim you Robbins comes let me in. Watch 13. You should have let me watch 13.
Yeah. But, just,
I LOL'd on that line. I thought that was very funny about how she's has the awareness that because she's watched a movie like 13, now she's this different person. I thought was very, very
and she's like gaslighting her dad to make it seem like it was his fault that he let
it's
her
his
watch
fault
it.
Too.
He let her watch it. And now she's
I'm forever changed. Now because of you. You know, I loved that. I was so into that. And then she gets frozen and she's out of the movie.
Yeah, but even
4 to 5 minutes.
She does make her moments, like she's effective in the moments that she's in there. But yeah, when Josh Hutcherson is mad, I don't know what it is, and maybe I'm reading way too much into it, but I'm like, it almost seems like he really took the notes of his older sister to be like, this is how mad I'm going to be mad too. And there's like this, you know, passing on of how we act to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how Kristen Stewart like bullied me, so I'm going to bully young Bobo the same way. And I think I'm reading a little too much into it, but I like to think that that's,
I like it.
That's,
but also too, isn't that funny to think about that then they become like, that's kind of his energy too as PETA, isn't that Josh Hutcherson, where he's like meeting her
like a strong one, you know, sister and love interest,
not aside, sister necessarily, but like,
but just like a strong woman her. that he's trying to like live up to.
It was really crazy to me, where I'm like, it's like Kristen Stewart is such an analog for you know, Jennifer Lawrence. Oh man, like,
yeah,
this movie really, I really did enjoy a lot of this movie because of the anomalies again that happen, where I'm like, oh, so to go back to
like the Dax Shepard thing, I think is, yeah, like I agree, like that was unexpected and enjoyable, was his performance for sure.
Totally. And then yeah, to get back to the plot of it, is like, so Dax Shepard comes in as this space man that is going to help these young boys navigate through this board game. And then it presents after the robot that they got as like a robot malfunction. And so there's this, you know, essentially like a jaw. Oh, that's the thing. Okay. So maybe it's because I just recently watched Jaws, and because of July 4th, I was like, God, I gotta fucking watch Jaws. And then I watched Jaws, and I was like, this movie fucking rocks so hard.
Absolutely.
And I thought I got so much Jaws energy with the Zorgons, where it was like, don't show them yet. Mm-hmm. Don't show them yet. Cause like, to start moving through the movie, like, yeah, they have all these problems and with the house through playing this game, and then they pull the card that the Zorgons are going to come get them, that there are these like aliens that we don't necessarily, like, we've never seen. And that's why I make the Jaws comp, is like, there's this threat out there that is unseen, and then the movie goes almost, I would argue, through pains to be like, we're not gonna fucking show you yet. Yeah. We're not gonna show you yet.
Or even like War of the Worlds, you know, like that's a different time, but like where they show the aliens kind of coming through the house later on from their ship. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's he mentioned many times in the interviews I watched behind the scenes that like Spielberg is a big
influence, of course,
obviously, to anybody, but yeah, I think that practicality of some of that stuff, and overall just suspense adventure with kids and everything, and a lot of the sensibility is very much George Lucas, Spielberg kind of someone coming up watching those sort of things and gets to make a movie of their own. But yeah, I feel good about the movie. I'm trying to think if there's anything more to say about the big twist at the end. I think there's that whole thing where Kristen Stewart is clearly like smitten with Dax Shepard, and like when she
his eyes,
and then finds out that that's her brother at the end, and
which is out. So the line at the very end of the movie.
There's a thing that happened in this movie. Yeah. This is a weird thing.
Oh my God, it's so weird. And there's a line that's like, I would argue there's maybe a minute left of the movie after the line is said.
Yeah.
But Josh Hutcherson tells Kristen Stewart, like, wasn't that weird? Like, are you still into me?
Like, or something eyes? To that? Yeah, or something like that. Yeah. And Kristen Stewart was like, that was my brother. I was about to. And then it just like jump cuts to something else. And I'm like,
oh,
wow.
My God. Oh, weird. but yeah, like,
but also like more weird stuff. Weird stuff is fun.
I'm down to get to the end of this movie.
Yeah, I'm all good. I was trying to think if there's anything else on that tail end.
It's, but the end of this movie really drove me nuts, because, and like, we've been dancing around it, but it, this movie, I would say, really, really frustrated and lost me that there were so many revelations about the character relationships and about what's going on in the last 15, 20 minutes of the movie. Mm-hmm. And it was so weird to just experience, like, wow, we're learning about this now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the general feeling I got. Like, whoa, why are we just learning about this? Like, because it just solely on a script writing level, like, there's nothing to think about. Yeah. It literally was like you had kind of a little bit maybe of an idea, and then it tells you, and then the movie is like, and we're out of here. Like, and we're done.
It
really was so wild to me.
For a movie that is very simple and straightforward, I felt strangely dumb at the end of how, like, hand waving it away of like, you get it. And I was
you get it. Right. Totally.
Okay. So that's Dax is Walter. Walter is Dax. And that his brother was the same and everything. And the whole time I'm like, I'm leaning in because I'm like, okay, so what's this going to mean? Is this just a visual representation? Is that actually him? Is there some sort of time loop that's going to start to occur now? You know, and nothing is said. All that happens is just they touch each other and get absorbed. Their essence gets absorbed into the other person. Dax touches Walter and then de-ages back into Walter, then gets absorbed into Walter. And then a black hole of forms and they all get sucked inside. And the movie ends. And the movie just ends. Like, you guys had all this time to, like, I don't need much. I really don't need much. But just like, and maybe those lines would have been really hard to write about, like, oh, he's getting absorbed into his day. And that means that it was an alternate timeline. But like at the end, I was like, am I about to look up Zathura ending explained?
Fuck you, movie.
It made me feel dumber. I was like, oh, it is just that. It is what I thought. It's just like not well explained. And I was like hoping that it would be a little bit, there'd be a little bit more there, you know, at least, or I don't know, some sort of time loop or some sort of, like, Dax Shepard just kind of looked so assured of that moment and didn't seem as shocked or like emotionally charged when he sees his younger brother. He's like, and he just looks at himself and he's like, yeah, good job. All right, see you guys later. I don't know. It didn't earn it.
Don't say I don't know. Don't devalue this. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, I just did not earn it. Blew my mind how much character information we got at the last 20 minutes of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, again, that's why I've been setting this up in this conversation once we get into our final thoughts coming up here. Is like, this movie does a awful job of setting up, like, this situation is like this situation, and now that person is, like, you know, figuring this out, or this person is actually this person having learned this, and then they're trying to teach the younger version of themselves this. Like, all of that happens in the last 20 minutes of this movie. It is so crazy. I literally, my jaw was on the floor. It's like, wait, okay, so what? Like, what? Stop it.
Yeah. Oh. Well, that is Zathura. I am going to look at my Zathura. And I'll just look at any other. Like, I have like 10 notes here. One, Jack 3 poster. There's a Jack 3 poster in what's the young in Bobo's room, I think, or it's there. They share a room. Because later on he's shooting him with an air gun. You remember those air guns? And he's shooting. That was kind of fun. And it seemed kind of like a little bit of weird foreshadowing of things being shot at you. I don't know. I'm trying to give this movie credit. And then watching SpongeBob, it's a classic SpongeBob app, the bubble blowing one with the elephant and everything. But it was when he's like, can we watch SpongeBob?
I took two notes.
Nice. And then he's like, no. And then the Bobo's like, tartar sauce. When he said he loves SpongeBob so much that he used tartar sauce.
I like it too.
It's so funny. That was good.
My only real note is Tim Robbins says this thing that really kind of sent me reeling for like the next 20 minutes of the movie that I kind of didn't pay attention to is he says, some days you gotta grow up all at once. Mm. And he says it like it's a thing we've always heard. Mm. And I was like, whoa, like what? Wait a minute. I've never heard that in my life. And then it just like, it's one of those things where kids movies can do this. And again, I'm not saying that this was a bad thing about the movie. It just really, you know, like kids movies present platitudes more often than not. They go like, this is like a saying that us adults have that you as a child aren't privy to, but let me tell you about it so you can understand where I'm coming from. And I just had never heard this line.
I get the sentiment, I guess, but yeah.
I get the sentiment, but I was like, some days you gotta grow up all at once. And I was like, man, wow, okay, fuck. I mean,
figure it out, Walter.
And I think that's the thing that is ultimately my, like, why it was so jarring as a platitude is like the movie ultimately doesn't address that platitude is like what that means is both kids do not grow up all at once, even though they're presented with all of these like fantastical problems that would drive them to, you know, grow up to figure them out. That doesn't happen in the movie at all. Like if I were to, like, when I think about the movie or what I was thinking about when I left the movie and it was over, I was like, did the kids grow up?
It was so much more about their relationship. That's so much more what it was about. It was so like, especially with that final moment of just, don't wish your brother wasn't born. That seems like so much like what it ended on. It was just like, you know, be nice. Don't wish your brother wasn't born. Be nice to your brother. You know, all of the growing up stuff was like, yeah, I get that idea, but everything was so random of just drawing a card or whatever and just seeing what would happen. And oh, I guess he saves them a little bit at the end, but it's so much more about their relationship than growing up. Yeah, overall.
Yeah. it drove me nuts. Yeah.
And I don't know, as far as like Tim Robbins following up at the end or anything, I don't know, just didn't have any follow through for that ending.
You know, yeah. Can I, before we get into this, you know what I would posit? And again, I want to posit this in particular because we're going to watch Jumanji is one thing that I think the movie should have had that it didn't is a representation of the worst version of themselves that they have to combat. Like I wanted either like Jonah Bobo to be the leader of the Zargons and like a fucked up weird version of like, he brothers or whatever, or, yeah. You know, or something to that effect, or maybe Tim Robbins was, you know, like there was a Zargon that was like Tim Robbins,
I like that,
or something.
Yeah.
Because
that's where I was waiting for it to be like, oh, it was movie, all inside their heads and they were just playing the board game on an afternoon, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
So when Walter gets a robot, the first thing he asks it to do is get me a juice box, biatch.
Hell yeah.
Like that. That was the time. There's
the gaga
bullet poster. They eat meat. Oh, good. Dude, you're meat. I like that. Yeah. I like that line. Dude, you're meat.
We're meat. Yeah,
we're meat, and then he brings out, yeah, there's a little callback.
We're meat.
Then he gets to explain it to Chris and Stewart. There's a lot of like one thing happening to one person and then that person passing it on to the other person. Like there's a lot of telephone. And I get the whatever the sins of my father sort of idea, maybe they're trying to get a little bit of, but I don't know.
You know what I didn't take notes on this, but something I want to put in before we close this is I legitimately was freaked out by those goats. I did not like that at all. When the goat's eyes came out, I fucking did not care.
I didn't care for that either.
It was like, I don't want
One time they wanted to use CG. They want to put eyes on goats. Come on now.
He's like, I saw a four-eyed goat. And I'm like, yeah, you did.
Why were there goats? Are they going to burn the goats?
And then they shit like neon. And then it gets on his shoe and stuff. And then the Zorgon finds out that he's got goat shit on his shoe. Oh, my God. This movie.
Yeah. My only last thing was when he's trying to save Walter from flying away for cheating. He's like, I love just the whole progression. He's like, he does this whole movie like, Walter. And he's like, don't worry, I'll figure it out. I got the perfect idea. He grabs the lamp and he's just like, okay, I want to throw it and then you're going to catch it. And he just fucking fails so bad. And he tosses and the lamp just crashes. And there's like a nice comedic beat before he's like, I'll get another lamp. I don't know. That's like the Favreau has some comedic stuff that he knows what he's doing with all the timing. But all right.
Wait, speaking of comedic moment, one last thing is I thought it was very funny, and I also hated it a lot. Is there was this whole fucking bit about the brothers and the walkie-talkies and the walkie-talkie breaking, and then there's a part of the movie where Dax Shepard's like, no, the walkie-talkie's fine, and he just puts it back in place, and I was like, fuck you, movie. Like, what? Like, so we had a whole beat, emotional beat, about the walkie-talkie breaking, and then Dax Shepard just comes in, he's like, no, walkie's fine, bam.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I took it and I was like, you fucking kids, man. Like, you, like the older brother, like,
yeah, totally.
Before he like saw him, less he saw the walkie talkie different chain or like whatever, like, and the brother messed with it and the thing fell off, and he immediately was just mad at the brother.
Mad at
him. Broken. Yeah. Didn't try to fix it. Didn't try to do anything with it. Just was like, it's broken. It's over. Fuck you. I'm going to go run and tell dad. Like, that's just was his initial reaction. Besides just instead of just like, dude, you could just put it right back in.
Right back in. And
not have to make a big fucking deal out of this. But
we'll all sticker.
But there was, I know what you mean, where it's just kind of that moment where it's like, dude, you can just put it back in. There was no like sort of like, it showed Bobo's face for a second, but I wanted Bobo to be a little bit more like looking over at Walter like, you see, like.
Well, because fundamentally what I think the scene was about, like, and it just doesn't do it well, because again, the problem is this movie is so poorly set up. It's like, don't worry about it, Bobo. Like, it's like, I, as the older brother and also the older brother in the future, like, I'm not worried about this. Like, it's fine. Like, it's fixed. Let me show you how it's fixed. I was actually just mad at you because you didn't listen or broke something, you know, out of spite or whatever. Like, but none of that is actually in the movie. It sucks. It's just like, it's fine. Fix it. Okay, plot, moving on.
There was one little edit of his face, and I knew that they were trying to, but I was like, you guys could have, made a bit more out of that than you did. Let's check out what those darn critics have to say over here with that 77% certified fresh from those tomatoes. We're checking on some top critics reviews here on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's see what we got. Where should we start? I want to go to David Jenkins at Time Out. Favreau gratifyingly prevents the film from becoming a mere maelstrom of CG effects. I don't want to do that one. Sorry. It cut off there. I messed up. Peter DeBruge, Miami Herald, 3.5 out of 4. A wild buckle up and blast off adventure that plunges every corner of kids' favorite subject. Every kid loves space.
Yep.
Ask Peter DeBruge.
Do you think, wait, can I pause at this, James, real quick, is like, Are we just like grown men commenting on a kid's movie like too much?
You know what I mean? We got there. Yeah, we got there. But it's okay.
Okay. Because like, I guess I just, you know, I guess I was expecting this to happen when we started getting into reviews. It's like, are we like, would kids love this and we're just being pieces
of shit? But that's the thing, is like the audience didn't like it. And from my knowledge, there's not many kids that are critics.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's what this show is for, is to get into it. And like at the beginning of the show, I feel like
you're right.
And I know you share the sentiment of like, just because it's a kid's movie doesn't mean it can't be like criticized, and it doesn't mean it can be dumbed down either. Like it's just, totally. You know, and the things that we're asking for are like what the is. It's almost like what the movie posits. We're like, okay, so you presented this, like follow through with it. Like you are presenting some pretty interesting, fun stuff for a kids' adventure space movie. Like follow through with it in a meaningful way. I feel like is overall like
our biggest thing.
Yeah. So it's not so much that like, you know, like yes, it's not up to my standard.
Yeah, right. Like, I guess I'm a little concerned.
We want more for the kids, you know. For that matter, we were somewhat of the age to see this at the time, and it didn't tickle our
fancy. Yeah, so. I don't. Have we been like overly harsh on this? I don't think so. Right.
I don't hate it. I'll say that, but I don't love it. It's going to be extremely forgettable, and my review will definitely have something to do with it just being in a house, goddamn house, the whole time. I could say that in more and more different ways, but I'm like, I'm kind of just been over movies just being in a house, and so that could just one house, one location the whole time. Because there's a lot of like Blumhouse sort of like low budget horror movie things that are just like, we got a house for a couple weeks, let's just make a movie out of it. And it's like I can see through the seams a little bit. This one really makes a set and does a lot with it. Appreciate that. But there's a part of that too where I'm like, I want to go on a planet. Get me on a planet. I want to go on Zathura. Show me Zathura, baby. You don't even fucking see Zathura, man. I want to see it. All right, before I get too into my thoughts, we'll do a few more from these critics and some audience members. Amy Bancole, Houston Chronicle. After watching the kids play Zathura in Zathura, a crackling family adventure in which sibling rivalries play out against a backdrop of Robbie-like robot assaults and devouring gill monsters, all I can say is, let me at it.
Totally.
Amy wants Zathura. Letter.
Amy wants. Amy wants. What is the Congo?
Congo.
Amy wants Zathura. Amy wants Zathura. That monkey's gonna fuck that movie.
I mean, Amy's gonna fuck this movie. Liam Lacey, Globe and Mail. Zathura is easygoing, brashly humorous, and a lot less interested in technology than adventure. 3 out of 4. Tom Long, Detroit News. There's a wonderful old-fashioned zest to Zathura, an air of jet-propelled innocent wonder that has just enough modern grounding and grumbling to ring emotionally true. It's the sort of movie that feels simultaneously classic and new.
The fuck up. Yeah. And they got married after that review.
Yeah. I'll wrap up here with the final paragraph of Roger Ebert's review. A 3 out of 4 from Roger Ebert. He enjoyed this movie. Zathura lacks the undercurrents of archetypal menace and genuine emotion that informed the Polar Express, a true classic that is being re-released again this year. Loves Polar Express. But it works gloriously as space opera. We are going through a period right now in which every video game is being turned into a movie, resulting in cheerless exercises such as Doom, which mindlessly consists of aliens popping up and getting creamed. Zathura is based on a different kind of game, in which the heroes are not simply shooting at targets, but are actually surrounded by real events that they need to figure out. They are active heroes, not passive marksmen. Nobody even gets killed in Zathura. Well, depending on what happens to the lizards on the other side of that black hole.
Yeah, or Oh my God.
And that's how he ends the review.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
My favorite thing is when a critic takes to task, and I definitely catch myself doing this as well, another movie to make their point about that movie.
About like, how bad.
We've done that. I'm sure in this, you know, sure. Jumanji being one of them. But it's just so funny. Like, it's so of the time, the movies that he picks. He's like, it's not as good as Polar Express, but it's definitely much better than Doom. It's like
Doom, yeah. Wow, it's like, what a time. No shit. Well, actually, both can be true, as both suck. So
yeah, all of those can suck. Like, they can all just be bad.
They can all be shitty. Like, yeah, I don't know.
Audience gave it a 51%. We'll check out some 1-star reviews here on Letterboxd. We'll start with Morgan Gilbert, 1-star. This movie has Kristen Stewart's character lusting after Dax Shepard's stranded astronaut. This is already a bit creepy, but then it's revealed that the astronaut is an alternate reality version of her younger brother aged 15 years by being stuck in the game of Zathura. This revelation is horrifying. I felt reality crack, and like in the hit film Zathura, I saw stars on the other side, but like no stars I had ever seen. And then they saw me. This is the Amazon basics of the Jumanji cinematic universe. It clones most of the original movie's elements, but badly. More seriously, this is probably a kid's movie, but fuck me. I am haunted by the revelation that the astronaut is her brother. Fuck. Yeah, totally. What a nightmare.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And then the fact that the movie takes time to, like, the sister falls in love with him. Oh, man. Yeah. Totally.
So it's one thing to have that in the movie, and whatever Star Wars sort of thing, incestuous thing you're touching on, who knows, or whatever it may be. It's like another to have it near the end where you really just have that taste in your mouth as you're walking away. It's pretty weird. From Liz W, 1-star. I woke up from my nap thinking about this movie for the first time in about 10 years. Wish I knew why.
Hey man, thank God you woke up from your nap.
yeah. You should put that, Brandon, on the add that to the thread. Yeah. I'm glad you woke up.
Woken up from his nap. Brandini.
that's how I do straight
out of his nap.
All my posts. I post it on Facebook every time I wake up from my nap. Wow. Cyril, 1-star. This is terrible. That plot twist just made me want to barf so badly because it depicts toned-down electro love between minors. Also, I feel sad seeing Kristen's role because she played a character where being sexy in the Western world is being conventionalized, especially to preteens who receive intense pressure from toxic men.
Wow, interesting.
That's
way to go.
To be upset about.
Glad you're upset about that.
From Rachy Rachy, stupid fucking situation to be in. 1-star. From Richard Gowan, 1-star. This sequel of sorts to Jumanji is cheap and pitiful, boasting shoddy effects for its premise and full of woefully tension building to a whole lot of nothing setups and payoffs, coupled with the acting being severely lackluster compared to its spiritual predecessor. If Jumanji was a treasure trove of imagination and possibilities, this is the titular black hole sucking up all that wonder into nothingness. I think that's a good way to end. There's other things like
List. Yeah. No, that is a good way to end. Yeah,
I feel like some of the reviews were a lot of like,
fuck me up, baby.
Or like,
suck me up into the black hole.
People being really annoyed with the kids, just whining and complaining all the time and yelling at each other and fighting. Yeah. It was like, and even some parents 100%. Being like, I watch this with my kids and I don't want to encourage this sort of thing.
No, you know, yeah, like dude, kids totally. Just yelling and
fighting at each other. I'll do one more from Benji Gladman on Google Reviews, 1-star. This is my favorite movie of all time. I can remember the times in my childhood where I would play this movie for hours on end. As a mature adult of age now, I've seen how beautiful and stunning this movie really is. The cinematography and shooting of this film is out of this world. Pun intended. As a soon-to-be parent of two, this movie will definitely be played in my household for years to come. All in all, this film deserves a 1-star rating for the overall impact and difference in my life.
I love that. Cool. Very cool.
And there's a couple of them on Google reviews where like people give it a shining review. and then just give like one star. Even one that's so much that goes so far as to say, where is it?
This movie means a lot to me, but it sucks.
From Ethan Nicky, I love the emotion and drama in this film. I give it 5 stars, but they log 1 star.
1 star.
So I don't know what kind of copy. There's some copy pasta in here. That's interesting as well. I'll do one. This review is posted twice. Someone even put at the very bottom of the review, 2 people found this helpful as part of the review. So that people would think that people thought it was helpful, even though it was just part of the review. Can someone please help me, as I cannot seem to get the annoying voice of that Danny child out of my head with his whiny Walter. And I'm sorry. On a serious note, this movie has some very inappropriate messages concerning Alabamic issues. Not enough attention has been brought to the highly disturbing fact that Lisa fancies the older version of her own brother. Everyone is mad at this. This ruined the whole movie for me. Tears of anger, in parentheses.
Wow. That's an Alabamic issue.
Alabamic, right? I know. I was like, what's Alabamic? This combined with that bug-eyed child Danny has led me to require psychiatric help. I don't blame the old Walter for wishing death upon that brat. Overall, yikes. I regret viewing this piece of cinema and will never get back the sanity and 1 hour, 54 minutes I once had. And then right underneath that, I'm going to post that same review. I don't know what's happening. Reviews are interesting.
Anyways.
So what do you think about the movie, Brandon?
I'm gonna dive right into it.
Yeah, what do you think? What'd you give it? What do you score out of 100?
I think this movie is not successful in what it's trying to do. I think the acting is good. I think some of the direction is good. But overall, I would give this movie a 55%.
That's right on. Yeah, I feel like beyond all of the problems with it and just being in a house the whole time, like playing a game, being shot up into space, I'm like, okay, that's just the beginning. We're shot up into space in this house. What's going to happen next? For the next hour or so, you're going to be in that house and things are going to be coming to you. You're not going to those things. None of those cards are like, you travel to a new planet. You go here. You know, it's like, this is maybe like, whatever, just not the hill to die on and everything when there's so many other things going on with this movie that I could criticize. But that was such a base level of like, by the middle point, I'm like, get me out of this house. I'm done. Like there's a whole solar system out there, you know? But beyond that, yeah, I guess positives.
Scathing indictment. I like that. There's a whole solar system out there.
And we're in the house.
We're stuck in this fucking house.
Especially when there's like Galaxy Quest, there's Hitchhiker's Guide. I feel like where's the movies like around this time that have like fun sci-fi, very funny. So Hitchhiker's is hilarious. Galaxy Quest is a very fun movie. And just having those kind of movies to compare with as well. Even Jumanji. Some pretty good effects with Stan Winston, some pretty good acting with some of the kid actors, but just extremely forgettable and not something that I'll want to revisit. And I think you're definitely right on with that 50 range. I'll just join you. That sounds good. Yeah, 55 sounds good.
55. Yeah. Let's go.
I knew it was going to be. So I was trying to decide what high or low of that, but you know, it's like, it's passable in a way. It's like watchable and entertaining in a way. Like there's nothing like aggressively wrong with it. Like they play a board game, they go to space, they work out their issues from brother to brother. That tickles your fancy. You know, maybe this is like great, but you know, I just wanted something a little bit more, whether it be danger or a little bit more depth with some of the character relationships and how it's structured and how it's built upon and where it ends. And I think you put it very well, like in a way that I didn't even fully put together in my mind watching it today. So that's what these conversations are for. I hope if you guys listen to it, I hope it kind of formatted the movie in a way for you. I know that's, I don't know. When I listen to movie podcasts, I appreciate that a lot too. It's just hearing people kind of work through it a bit, even if it's something like Zathura. And, you know, I don't think we should I like movies like this. I love it, man. Space Adventures. I love that shit.
Like this movie fits well into us coming back because we're so back. Like, just, I don't know. Like this isn't a terrible movie, but it's nice to just kind of go through the steps of like, oh man, this is, I just had an issue with more like a lack of character development, pacing, you know, that kind of thing. It's really, yeah.
And there's a reason, like, I feel like the world at large doesn't, you know, quite remember
this movie. Yeah, doesn't remember this movie, right.
I feel like it's going to fade from not only, you know, the collective conscience, but myself as well. Surprise, surprise, while it may not be the most polarizing movie ever, we thought it only so appropriate to get into it only after Zathura, because we're going backwards. We're going to check out Jumanji here next time here on the Polarized Pod. Surprisingly, the scores are, I don't know, not what you would expect, at least what I expected. From the critics, it is a rotten 52%. That splat symbol is like a splat. Bleh. And then for the audience, it's a 63%. You know, not even as high as I thought, but it is technically polarizing. It is a, like, is it a piece of pop culture, especially from our era, you know, 1995, as Brandon has highlighted some other movies from there. It was funny, Brandon, I just watched Strange Days last night, and I didn't even know it was from 1995 until I was already like in it, and I was like, wow, it's another 1995 movie. And
I haven't seen that either, but that movie looks great.
I just watched it, and it's been on my list for a long time, and it, like, I don't. And when, as I was watching, I was like, "What took me so long? This movie fucking rocks!" It really does rock.
1995, pretty cool.
95, pretty cool.
And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. So join us. 52 from the critics, 63% from the audience. This has been Polarized Pod. This has been our very special Zathura ep. We are so back. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for coming back with us. We're streaming this live on twitch.tv/polarizedpod. You can send us a line at PolarizeThePod@gmail.com. I have been James Deeney, the forever guest.
I've been Brandini, the guest of forever.
The guest of forever, the best buddy in this whole wide universe, on this floating house that we're floating on in the podcast universe. Podcast.
It's a thorough, yeah.
Yeah. This is now Zathura podcast. We love you all. Please join us next time for Jumanji, and a very special guest as well. A returning guest will be there, and we love you.
Yep.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.